made a fine general. Might still be one someday. Cassian couldn't tell if it would be a good thing to turn Nesta into that sort of a weapon. She'd pointed at the King of Hybern in a death promise before she'd been turned High Fae against her will. Months later, she'd held up his severed head like a trophy and stared into his dead eyes. And if the bone carver had spoken true about her emerging from the cauldron as something to fear? Fuck. He didn't bother with his cloak as he yanked open the glass doors, breathing in a face full of crisp autumn air, and stalked toward Moore's opening arms. No ice or snow crusted the mountain hold of Windhaven, but it didn't stop the bitter cold from slamming into Nesta the moment they appeared. Morrigan vanished with a wink at Cassian and a warning glower thrown at Nesta, leaving them assessing the field stretching ahead. A few small stone houses rose to the right, and beyond them stood some new residences made of fresh pine. A village. That was what this place had become recently. But immediately before them lay the fighting rings, right along the edge of the flat mountaintop, fully stocked with various weapons, weights, and training supplies. Nesta had no idea what any of the impressive varieties were, beyond their basic names. Sword, dagger, arrow, shield, spear, bow, brutal-looking round spiky ball on a chain. On their other side smoldered fire pits, clouds of smoke drifting to a fenced-in array of livestock, sheep and pigs and goats, all shaggy but well-fed, and of course, the Illyrians themselves. Females tended to steaming pots and pans around those fires, and all of them halted when Cassian and Nesta appeared. So did the dozens of males in those sparring rings. None smiled. A broad-shouldered, stocky male, whom Nesta vaguely recognized, sauntered their way, flanked too deep by younger males. They all had their wings tucked in tight, perhaps to walk as a unit. But as they stopped in front of Cassian, those wings spread slightly. Cassian kept his in what Nesta called his casual spread, not wide, but not tucked in close. The position conveyed the perfect amount of ease and arrogance. Readiness and power. The familiar male's gaze snagged on her.
What's her business here?
Nesta gave him a secretive smile. Witchcraft? She could have sworn Cassian muttered a plea to the mother before he cut in.
I will remind you, Devlin, that Nesta Archeron is our High Lady's sister and will be treated with respect.
The words held enough of a bite that even Nesta glanced at Cassian's stone-cold face. She had not heard that unyielding tone since the war.
She will be training here.
Nesta wanted nothing more than to shove him off the nearby cliff edge. Devlin's face curdled.
Any weapons she touches must be buried afterward. Leave them in a pile.
Nesta blinked. Cassian's nostrils flared.
We will do no such thing.
Devlin sniffed at her, his cronies snickering.
Are you bleeding, witch? If you are, you will not be allowed to touch the weapons at all.
Nesta made herself pause. Contemplate the best way to knock the bastard down a few pegs. Cassian said with remarkable steadiness,
Those are outdated superstitions. She can touch the weapons whether she has her cycle or not.
She can,
Devlin said,
but they will still be buried.
Silence fell. Nesta didn't fail to note that Cassian's expression had darkened as he stared down Devlin. But he said abruptly,
How are the new recruits faring?
Devlin opened his mouth, then shut it, irritation flashing there at a fight denied.
Fine.
He spat and turned away, his soldiers following. Cassian's face tightened with each breath, and Nesta braced herself, a thrill slowly building in her blood, for him to rip into Devlin. But Cassian growled,
Let's go,
and began walking toward an empty training area. Devlin glared over a shoulder, and Nesta threw him a cool look,
before striding after Cassian. The Illyrian's gaze lingered like a burning brand on her spine. Cassian didn't go for one of the countless weapons racks stationed throughout the training area. He just halted in the farthest ring, hands on his hips, and waited for her. Like hell would she join him. She spied a weather-worn rock near the rack of weapons, its smoothness, either from the harsh climate or the untold number of warriors who'd taken a seat on it, as she did then. Its frigid surface bit into her skin even through the thickness of the leathers.
What are you doing?
Cassian's handsome face was nearly predatory. She crossed her legs at the ankles and arranged the fall of her cape, like the train of a gown. I told you, I'm not training.
Get up.
He'd never ordered her like that. Get up, she'd sobbed that day before the King of Highburn. Get up! Nesta met his stare, willed hers to be distant and unruffled.
I am officially attending training, Cassian, but you can't make me do a lick of it.
She motioned to the mud. Drag me through it if you want, but I won't lift a finger. The Illyrian's stares pelted them like stones. Cassian bristled. Good. Let him see what a waste of life, what an utter wretch she'd become.
Get the hell up.
His words were a soft snarl. Devlin and his group had returned, attracted by their argument, and gathered beyond the edge of the circle. Cassian's hazel eyes remained fixed on her, though. A slight pleading note flickered in them.
Get up.
A small voice whispered in her head, her bones. Don't humiliate him like this. Don't give these assholes the satisfaction of seeing him made a fool. But her body refused to move. She'd drawn her line, and to yield? To him? To anyone? Something like disgust filled his face. Disappointment, anger. Good. Even as something crumpled inside her, she couldn't stop the relief. Cassian turned away from her, drawing the sword sheathed down his back. And without another word, without a glance, he began his morning exercises.
Let him hate her. It was better that way.
Chapter 6. Each series of steps and movements Cassian went through was beautiful and lethal and precise. And it was all Nesta could do not to gawk. She'd never been able to look away from him. From the moment they'd met, she'd developed a keen awareness of his presence in any space, any room. She hadn't been able to stop it, to block it out, no matter how much she suggested otherwise. Go. He had begged her as he lay dying. I can't, she'd wept. I can't. She didn't know where the person she'd been in that moment had gone. Couldn't find her way back to her. But even as she sat on that rock and stared at the swaying pines covering the mountains, she watched Cassian from the corner of her eye, aware of every graceful movement. The rasp of his steady breathing, the flow of his dark hair in the wind. Hard at work, I see. Morrigan's voice drew Nesta's gaze from the mountains and the warrior who seemed so much a part of them. The stunning female stood beside her, brown eyes fixed on Cassian, admiration shining in them. There was no sign of Devlin or his followers, as if they'd drifted away long ago. Had it been 2 hours already? Moore said mildly, He is pretty, isn't he? Nesta's spine stiffened at the warmth in her tone.
Just ask him.
No amusement lit Morrigan's face as she shifted her attention down to Nesta. Why aren't you out there?
I'm taking a break.
Morrigan's gaze swept over Nesta's face, noting the lack of sweat or flushed skin. The hair barely out of place. The female said quietly, My vote would have been to dump you right back in the human lands, you know.
Oh, I know.
Nesta refused to stand, to meet the challenge. Good thing being Feyre's sister has its advantages. Morrigan's lip curled. Beyond her, Cassian had halted his smooth movements. Dark fire simmered in Morrigan's eyes. I knew plenty of people like you once. Her hand drifted to her abdomen. You never deserve the benefit of the doubt that good people like him give you. Nesta was well aware of that, and knew what manner of people Morrigan referred to, those who dwelled in the Court of Nightmares in the Hewn City. Feyre had never told her the full story, but Nesta knew the bare details. The monsters who had tormented and brutalized Morrigan until she was thrown to the wolves. Nesta leaned back on her hands, the cold rock biting through her gloves. She opened her mouth, but Cassian had reached them, breathless and gleaming with sweat.
You're early.
I wanted to see how things were coming along. Morrigan pulled her burning gaze from Nesta. Seems like today was a slow start. Cassian raked his fingers through his hair.
You could say that.
Nesta clenched her jaw hard enough to hurt. Morrigan extended a hand to him, then threw one toward Nesta without so much as a glance. Shall we?
Morrigan was a self-righteous busybody. The thought raged through Nesta as she stood in the subterranean library beneath the House of Wind. A vain, self-righteous busybody.
Cassian hadn't spoken to her upon their return. She hadn't waited to see if he'd offer lunch, either, before going to her room and taking a bath to warm her bones. When she'd emerged, she'd found that a note had been slipped beneath her door. In tight, bold lettering, it told her to be in the library at 1. No threats, no promises to ship her off to the human lands, as if he didn't care whether she obeyed. Well, at least breaking him had been accomplished faster than she'd anticipated. She'd ventured to the library, not because of any desire to obey his or Rhysand's commands, but because the alternative was equally unbearable. Sitting in her silent bedroom, nothing but the roaring in her head to fill the quiet. It had been more than a year since she'd last been down here, since those terrifying moments when Highburn's assassins had snuck in, chasing her and Feyre into the dark heart of the library. She peered over the edge of the landing's stone railing, straightening into the black pit far below. No ancient creature slumbered in that darkness anymore. But the dimness remained, and at its bottom lay the ground where Cassian had landed, reaching for her. There had been such rage on his face at the sight of her terror. She sliced off the thought, pushed back the tremor that went through her, and focused on the female sitting at the desk, nearly hidden by columns of books stacked there. The female's hands were wrecked. There was no polite way of describing them beyond that. Bones bent and knobbed, fingers at the wrong angles. Feyre had once mentioned that the priestesses in this library had difficult pasts, to say the least. Nesta didn't want to know what had been done to Clotho, the library's high priestess, to render her thus, to have her tongue cut out, and then deliberately healed that way, so the damage might never be undone. Males had hurt her, and hands shoving her down, down, down into freezing water, voices laughing and sneering. A brutish male face grinning as he anticipated the trophy that would be pulled forth. She couldn't stop it, couldn't save Elaine, sobbing on the floor, couldn't save herself. No one was coming to rescue her. And these males would do what they wanted. And her body was not her own, not human, not for much longer. Nesta wrenched her thoughts back to the present, blasting back the memory. Her face veiled in the shadows beneath her pale hood, Clotho sat in silence, as if she'd seen the thoughts blare through Nesta, as if she knew how often the memory of that day in Highburn woke her. The limpid blue stone crowning the hood of Clotho's robe flickered like a siphon in the dim light as she slid a piece of parchment across the desk.
You can begin today by shelving books on level 3. Take the ramp behind me to reach it. There will be a cart with the books, which are organized alphabetically by author. If there is no author, set them aside and ask for help at the end of your shift.
Nesta nodded.
When is the end of my shift?
Using her wrists and the backs of her hands, Clotho pulled a small clock to herself, pointed with a bulging knuckle to the 6 o'clock marker. 5 hours of work.
Nesta could do that.
Fine. Clotho considered her again, like she could see the churning, roaring sea inside her that refused to leave her alone for so much as a moment, that refused to grant her a second of peace. Nesta lowered her eyes to the desk, forced herself to release a breath. But with its escape past her lips, that familiar weight swept in.
I am worthless, and I am nothing, Nesta nearly said.
She wasn't sure why the words bubbled up, pressing on her lips to voice them.
I hate everything that I am, and I am so tired. I am tired of wanting to be anywhere but in my own head.
She waited for Clotho to gesture, to do anything to say she'd heard the thoughts. The priestess motioned to the library above and below. A silent dismissal. Feet heavy, Nesta made her way to the sloping ramp. The task was menial, but required enough concentration that time slipped away, her mind quieting to a blissful nothing. No one approached Nesta as she hunted down sections and shelves, fingers skimming over the spines of books as she searched for the right place. There were at least 3 dozen priestesses who worked and researched and healed here, though it was nearly impossible to count them when they all wore the same pale robes, and so many kept the hoods over their faces. The ones who'd left their hoods down had offered her tentative smiles. This was their sanctuary, gifted to them by Rhysand. No one could enter without their permission, which meant they'd approved her presence, for whatever reason. Nesta's hands were near withered with dust by the time a bell chimed 6 silvery peals throughout the cavernous library, ringing from its top levels down to the black pit. Some priestesses rose from where they worked at the desks and chairs on each level. Some remained. She found Clotho at the same desk. Did she ever lift her hood? She must, in order to bathe. But did she ever show anyone her face? I'm done for the day, Nesta announced. Clotho slid another note across the desk. Thank you for your assistance. We will see you tomorrow.
All right.
Nesta pocketed the note, but Clotho held up a broken hand. Nesta watched with no shortage of awe as a fountain pen lifted above a piece of paper and began to write. Wear clothes you don't mind getting dusty. You'll wreck that beautiful dress down here. Nesta glanced to the gray gown she'd thrown on. All right, she repeated. The pen began moving again, somehow spelled to connect with Clotho's thoughts. It was nice to meet you, Nesta. Feyre speaks highly of you. Nesta turned away. No one likes a liar, priestess. She could have sworn a breath of amusement fluttered from beneath the female's hood. Cassian didn't come to dinner. Nesta had stopped in her room only long enough to wash the dust from her hands and face, and then nearly sprinted upstairs, stomach growling. The dining room had been empty. The place setting for one confirmed that she was in for a solitary meal. She'd stared at the sunset-bathed city far below, the sole sounds her rustling dress and creaking chair. Why was she surprised? She'd humiliated him at Windhaven. He was probably with his friends at the river house,
ranting at them to find some other way to deal with her. A plate of food appeared, dumped unceremoniously onto the placemat. Even the house hated her. Nesta scowled at the red-stoned room. Wine? None appeared. She lifted the glass before her. Wine? Nothing. She tapped her nails on the table's smooth surface. Were you told to not give me wine? Talking to a house, a new low. But as if in answer, the glass filled with water. Nesta snarled toward the open archway at her back. Funny. She surveyed the food, half a roast chicken seasoned with what smelled like rosemary and thyme, mashed potatoes swimming in butter, and green beans sautéed with garlic. That silence roared in her head, in the room. She drummed her fingers again. Ridiculous. This whole thing, this high-handed interference, was ridiculous. Nesta stood and aimed for the doorway. Keep your wine. I'll get my own. Chapter 7. Without the wall's magic blocking access to the human lands, Moore winnowed Cassian after sundown directly to the manor that had become home and headquarters to Jurian, Vasa, and apparently Lucian. Even more than a year later, the ravages of war lay evident around the estate. Trees felled, barren patches of earth where greenery had not yet returned, and a general bleak openness that made the gray-stoned house seem like an accidental survivor. In the moonlight, that starkness was even emptier. The remnants of trees silvered, the shadows in the pockmarked earth deeper. Cassian didn't know to whom the home had once belonged, and apparently neither did its new occupants. Feyre had told him that they called themselves the Band of Exiles. Cassian snorted to himself at the thought. Moore didn't linger upon dropping him at the house's arched wooden door, smirking in a way that told him, even if he begged her to help, she wouldn't. No, she wanted to see him play courtier, precisely as Rhys had asked. He hadn't planned on starting this mission today, but after that disastrous attempt at a lesson with Nesta, he'd needed to do something. Anything. Nesta had known exactly what bullshit she was pulling by refusing to get off that rock. How it would appear to Devlin and the other preening assholes. She'd known and done it anyway. So as soon as he'd dumped Nesta at the house, he'd headed to a deserted cliff by the sea where the roar of the surf drowned the raging heat in his bones. He'd stopped by the river house to admit to his failure, but Feyre had only simmered with annoyance at Nesta's behavior, and Rhys had given him a wary, amused look. It was Amran who had said, "Let her dig her own grave, boy, then offer her a hand." "I thought that's what this past year has been," he'd countered. "Keep reaching out your hand," had been Amran's only reply. He'd found Moore soon after that, explained that he needed to be transported, and here he was. He raised his fist to the door, but the wooden slab pulled away before he could touch it. Lucian's scarred, handsome face appeared, his golden eye whirring.
"I thought I sensed someone else arriving."
Cassian stepped into the house, floorboards creaking beneath his boots.
"You just got here?"
"No,"
Lucian said, and Cassian marked the tightness of his shoulders beneath the dark gray jacket he wore, the taut silence emanating from every stone of the house. He marked its layout, in case he needed to fight his way to an exit, which, given the displeasure that Lucian radiated as he strode for an archway to their left, seemed a distinct possibility. Without turning, Lucian said,
"Eris is here."
Cassian didn't falter, didn't reach for the knife strapped to his thigh, though it was an effort to block the memory of Moore's battered face. The note nailed to her abdomen, her naked body dumped like garbage at the border of the autumn court. The fucking bastard had found her there and left her, She had been on death's threshold, and Cassian's plans for what he'd one day do to him went far beyond the pain inflicted by a knife. Eris's suffering would last weeks, months, years. Cassian didn't care that Eris had convinced Kier to delay his visit to Valaris, had apparently done so out of whatever shred of kindness remained in him. Didn't care that Rhys had noted something in Eris that had earned his trust. None of that mattered to Cassian one fucking bit. His attention focused on the red-haired male seated near the roaring fire in the surprisingly fancy parlor. He knew enough to keep tabs on an enemy. Eris lounged in a golden chair, legs crossed, his pale face the portrait of courtly arrogance. Cassian's fingers curled. Every time he'd seen the prick these past 5 centuries, he'd struggled with it. This blinding rage at the mere sight of him. Eris smiled, well aware of it.
Cassian.
Lucian's gold eye clicked, reading Cassian's rage while warning flashed in his remaining russet eye. The male had grown up alongside Eris, had dealt with Eris's and Baron's cruelty, had his lover slaughtered by his own father. But Lucian had learned to keep his cool. Right. Rhys had asked Cassian to do this. He should think like Rhys, like Moore. Push aside the rage. Cassian gave himself a second to do so, vaguely aware of Vasa saying something. He had noted and half dismissed the two humans in the room, the brown-haired warrior Jurian and the red-haired young queen. If Rhys and Moore were here, they wouldn't say a word about anything in front of Eris, would pretend this was a friendly visit, to check on how the human lands were holding together, even if Eris was most likely their ally. No. Eris was their ally. Rhys had bargained with him, worked with him. Eris had held up his end at every turn. Rhys trusted him. Moore, despite all that had happened, trusted him. Sort of. So Cassian supposed he should do so as well. His head hurt. So many things to calculate. He'd done it on battlefields. But these mind games and webs of lies? Why had Rhys asked him to do this? He'd been direct in dealing with the Illyrians. He'd laid out the hell that would be brought down upon them if they rebelled, and shown up to help with whatever they needed. That was in no way comparable to this. Cassian blinked and registered what Vasa had said.
General Cassian, a pleasure.
He gave the queen a swift, perfunctory bow.
Your Majesty.
Jurian coughed, and Cassian glanced to the human warrior. Once human? Partially human? He didn't know. Jurian had been sliced apart by Amarantha, his consciousness somehow trapped within his eye, which she'd mounted on a ring and worn for 500 years, until his lingering bones had been used by Hybern to resurrect his body and return that essence into this form, the same one that had led armies on those long-ago battlefields during the war. Who was Jurian now? What was he? From his spot on a ridiculous pink sofa by the far wall, Jurian said,
"It only goes to her head when you call her that."
Vasa straightened, her cobalt jacket a sharp contrast to the red gold of her hair. Of the three red-headed people in this room, Cassian liked her coloring the best. The golden hue of her skin, the large, up-tilted blue eyes framed by dark lashes and brows, and the silken red hair, which she'd cut to her shoulders since he'd last seen her. Vasa said to Jurian,
"I am a queen, you know."
A queen by night, and firebird by day, sold by her fellow human queens to a sorcerer lord who had enchanted her, damned her into transforming each dawn into a bird of fire and ash. Cassian had waited until sundown to visit, so as to find her in her human form. He needed her to be able to speak.
Jurian crossed an ankle over a knee, his muddy boots dull in the firelight.
Last I heard, your kingdom was no longer yours. Are you still a queen?
Vasa rolled her eyes, then looked to Lucian, who sank onto the sofa beside Jurian. Like the Fey male had settled similar arguments between them before, but Lucian's attention was upon Cassian.
Did you come with news or orders?
Keenly aware of Eris's presence near the fire, Cassian kept his gaze upon Lucian.
We give you orders as our emissary.
He nodded to Jurian and Vasa.
But when you are with your friends, we only give suggestions.
Eris snorted. Cassian ignored him and asked Lucian,
How is the Spring Court?
He had to give Lucian credit. The male was somehow able to move between his three roles, an emissary for the Night Court, ally to Jurian and Vasa, and liaison to Tamlin, and still dress immaculately. Lucian's face revealed nothing of how Tamlin and his court fared.
It's fine.
Cassian didn't know why he'd expected an update regarding the High Lord of Spring. Lucian only gave those in private to Rhys. Eris snorted again at Cassian's fumbling, and, unable to help himself, Cassian at last turned toward him.
What are you doing here?
Eris didn't so much as shift in his seat.
Several dozen of my soldiers were out on patrol in my lands several days ago and have not reported back. We found no sign of battle. Even my hounds couldn't track them beyond their last known location.
Cassian's brows lowered. He knew he shouldn't let anything show, but those hounds were the best in Prithian. Canines blessed with magic of their own. Gray and sleek like smoke, they could race as fast as the wind, sniff out any prey. They were so highly prized that the Autumn Court forbade them from being given or sold beyond its borders, and so expensive that only its nobility owned them. And they were bred rarely enough that even one was extremely difficult to come by. Eris, Cassian knew, had 12.
None of them could winnow?
Cassian asked.
No. While the unit is one of my most skilled in combat, none of its soldiers are remarkable in magic or breeding.
Breeding was tossed at Cassian with a smirk. Asshole. Vasa said, Eris came to see if I could think of any reason why his soldiers might have gotten into trouble with humans. His hounds detected strange scents at the site of the abduction, ones that seemed human but were odd, somehow. Cassian lifted a brow at Eris.
You believe a group of humans could kill your soldiers? They can't be that skilled, then. Depends on the human,
Jurian said, the male's face dark. Vasa's was a mirror. Cassian grimaced.
Sorry.
Some courtier. But Eris shrugged a shoulder.
I think plenty of parties are interested in triggering another war, and this would be the start of it. Though, perhaps your court did it. I wouldn't put it past Rhysand to winnow my soldiers away and plant some mysterious sense to throw us off.
Cassian flashed him a savage grin.
We're allies, remember?
Eris gave him an identical smile.
Always.
Cassian couldn't stop himself.
Maybe you made your own soldiers vanish, if they even vanished at all, and are just making this up for the same bullshit reason you just spewed out.
Eris chuckled, but Jurian cut in.
There have been tensions amongst the humans regarding your kind, but as far as we know, as far as we've heard from Lord Grayson's forces, the humans here have kept the old demarcation lines and have no interest in starting trouble.
Yet, was left unsaid. Would asking about the human queens on the continent reveal Rhys's hand? The conversation had shifted toward it, so he could bring it up as idle talk, rather than as the reason he'd come here. Fuck,
His head hurt.
What about your sisters?
He nodded to Vasa.
Would they have anything to do with this?
Eris's gaze shot to him, and Cassian reined in his curse. Perhaps he'd said too much. He wished Mor were here, even if putting her and Eris in a room together. No, he'd save her that misery. Vasa's cerulean eyes darkened.
We were just getting to that, actually.
She gestured to Cassian. You've heard the same rumors we have. They're stirring again across the sea and are poised to start trouble.
Are they stupid enough to do it is the real question,
Jurian said.
They are anything but stupid,
Lucian said, shaking his head.
But leaving a human scent at the site is so obvious a clue that it seems unlikely it was one of them.
Any move they make is heavily weighted, Vasa said, glancing to the wall of windows overlooking the destroyed lands beyond. Though I cannot think why any of them would capture your soldiers, she said to Eris, who seemed to be monitoring each word out of their mouths. There are other Fae on the continent itself, so why bother to cross the sea to take yours? And why not the Spring Courts? Tamlin wouldn't notice anyone missing at this point. Lucian cringed, and Cassian, while inclined to smirk at the thought of the asshole suffering, found himself frowning. If war was coming, they needed Tamlin and his forces in fighting shape. Needed Tamlin ready. Rhys had been visiting him regularly, making sure he'd be both on their side and capable of leading. How Rhys had managed to not kill the High Lord of Spring was something Cassian still couldn't understand. But that was why Rhys was High Lord, and Cassian his blade. He knew if he ever got the name of the human bastard who'd put his hands on Nesta, nothing would stop him from finding the man. A conversation he'd had with Nesta years ago when she'd still been human forever lurked in the back of his mind. How she'd stiffened at his touch, and he'd known, scented and seen, the fear in her eyes, and known that a man had hurt her, or tried to. She'd never told him the details, but she'd confirmed it enough by refusing to share the man's name. He'd often contemplated how he'd kill the man, if Nesta gave him the go-ahead. Peeling his skin from his bones would be a good start. His friends would understand the wound it pressed, how far the pain of that ancient wound would push him to go. A razed Illyrian camp was all that remained of the first and last time he'd let himself sink to that level of rage. And Rhys had appointed him to play courtier, to put aside the blade and use his words. It was a joke. Eris uncrossed his legs.
I suppose this could be to sow tensions among us, to make us eye each other with suspicion, weaken our bonds. Highburn would have done that,
Jurian agreed.
He might have taught them a thing or two,
before Nesta had beheaded him. But Vasa said, the queens require no teaching. They were well-versed in treachery before they ever contacted Highburn, and have dealt with greater monsters than him. Cassian could have sworn flames rippled across her blue eyes. Both Jurian and Lucian stared at her, the former's face utterly unreadable, and the latter's pained. Cassian suppressed his jolt. He should have asked someone before coming here how much time remained before Vasa would be forced to return to the continent, to the sorcerer lord at a remote lake who held her leash and had allowed her to leave only temporarily, as part of a bargain Feyre's father had struck. Feyre's father. And Nesta's father. Cassian blocked out the memory of the man's neck being snapped, of Nesta's face as it had happened. And deciding to damn caution to hell, he asked, which of the queens would do something this bold?
Vasa's golden face tightened. Briallen. The once young, once human queen who had been turned high fae by the cauldron, but in its rage at whatever Nesta had taken from it, the cauldron had punished Briallen. She was made immortal Fae, yes, but she was withered into a crone, doomed to be old for millennia. She made no secret of her hatred for Nesta, her desire for revenge. If Briallen made a move against Nesta, he'd kill the queen himself. Cassian tried to think over the bellowing beast in his head that tightened every muscle of his body until only bloody violence would appease it.
Easy,
Lucian said. Cassian snarled.
Easy,
Lucian repeated, and the flame sizzled in his russet eye. The flame, the surprising dominance within it, hit Cassian like a stone to the head, knocking him from his need to kill and kill and kill whatever might threaten. They were all staring. Cassian rolled his tensed shoulders, stretching out his wings. He'd revealed too much, like a stupid brute. He'd let them all see too much, learn too much.
Send that shadow singer of yours to track Briallen,
Jurian ordered, his face grave.
If she's somehow capable of capturing a unit of Fae soldiers, we need to know how. Swiftly.
Spoken like the general Jurian had once been. Cassian said to Vasa,
You really think Briallen would do something like this? Be that blatant? Someone has to be trying to fool us into going after her.
Lucian asked,
How would she even get here and vanish that quickly? Crossing the seas takes weeks. She'd need to winnow to pull it off. The queens can winnow,
Jurian corrected.
They did so during the war, remember?
But Vasa said, Only when several of us are together, and it's not winnowing as the Fae do, but a different power. It's akin to the way all seven High Lords can combine their powers to perform miracles.
Well, fuck.
Eris said,
I have it on good authority that the other three queens have scattered to the winds.
Cassian tucked away the information and the questions it raised. How did Eris know that?
Briallen has been residing alone in their palace for weeks now, long before my soldiers vanished. So she can't winnow then,
Cassian concluded.
And again, would she really be foolish enough to do something like this if the other queens have left?
Vasa's eyes darkened. Yes, the other's departure would serve to remove obstacles to her ambitions, but she'd only do this if she had someone of immense power behind her, perhaps pulling her strings. Even the fire seemed to quiet. Lucian's eye clicked.
Who?
You wonder who is capable of making a unit of Fae soldiers across the sea vanish? Who could give Briallen the power to winnow, or do it for her? Who could aid Briallen, so she'd be bold enough to do such a thing? Look to Kosche. Cassian froze as memories clicked into place, as surely as one of Amran's jigsaw puzzles. The sorcerer who imprisoned you is named Kosche? Is he the bone carver's brother?
Everyone gaped at him.
Cassian clarified.
The bone carver mentioned a brother to me once, a fellow true immortal and a death lord. That was his name.
Yes, Vasa breathed. Kosche was the bone carver's older brother.
Lucian and Jurian looked at her in surprise, but Vasa's gaze lay upon him. Fear and hatred filled it, as if speaking the male's name were abhorrent. Her voice hoarsened.
Kosche is no mere sorcerer. He's confined to the lake only due to an ancient spell. Because he was outsmarted once, everything he does is to free himself.
Why was he imprisoned?
Cassian asked.
The story is too long to tell, she hedged. But know that Briallen and the others sold me to him, not through their devices, but his, by words he planted in their courts, whispered on the winds.
He's still at the lake,
Lucian said carefully. Lucian had been there, Cassian recalled, had gone with Nesta's father to the lake where Vasa was held captive.
Yes,
Vasa said, relief in her eyes. But Kostche is as old as the sea. Older.
Some say he is death itself,
Eris murmured. I do not know if that is true, Vasa said. But they call him Kostche the Deathless, for he has no death awaiting him. He is truly immortal, and would know of anything that might give Briallen an edge against us.
And you think Kostche would do all of this?
Cassian pressed.
Not out of sympathy for the human queens, but with the goal of freeing himself.
Certainly.
Vasa peered at her hands, fingers flexing.
I fear what may happen if he gets free of the lake, if he sees this world on the cusp of disaster and knows he could strike and strike hard and make himself its master, as he once tried to do long ago.
Those are legends that predate our courts,
Eris said. Vasa nodded.
It is all I have gleaned from my time enslaved to him.
Lucian stared out the window, as if he could see the lake across a sea and a continent, as if he were setting his target. But Cassian had heard enough. He didn't wait for their goodbyes before heading for the archway and the front hall behind it. He'd made two steps beyond the front door, breathing in the crisp night air, when Eris said behind him,
You make a terrible courtier.
Cassian turned to find Eris shutting the front door and leaning against it. His face was pale and stony in the moonlight.
What do you know? As little as you,
Cassian said, offering a truth that he hoped Eris would deem a deception. Eris sniffed the night breeze, then smiled.
She couldn't be bothered to come inside to say hello.
How he'd detected Moore's lingering scent, Cassian didn't know. Perhaps Eris and his smoke hounds had more in common than he realized.
She didn't know you were here.
A lie. Moore had probably sensed it. He'd spare her the pain of coming back here and have Rhys retrieve him. He'd fly north for a few hours until he was in range of Rhys's power and then shoot a thought toward him. Eris's long red hair ruffled in the wind.
Whatever it is you're doing, whatever it is you're looking into, I want in. Why? And no. Because I need the edge Briallen has, what Kostche has told her or shown her. To overthrow your father. Because my father has already pledged his forces to Briallen and the war she wishes to incite.
Cassian started.
What?
Eris's face filled with cool amusement.
I wanted to feel out Vasa and Jurian.
He didn't mention his brother, oddly enough.
But they clearly know little about this. Explain what the fuck you mean by Baron pledging his forces to Briallen. That's exactly what it sounds like. He caught wind of her ambitions and went to her palace a month ago to meet with her. I stayed here, but I sent my best soldiers with him.
Cassian refrained from snipping about Eris opting out, especially as the last words settled.
Those wouldn't happen to be the same soldiers who went missing, would they?
Eris nodded gravely.
They returned with my father, but they were off, aloof, and strange. They vanished soon after, and my hounds confirmed that the scents at the scene are the same as those on the gifts Briallen sent to curry my father's favor.
You knew it was her this entire time? Cassian motioned to the house and the three people inside it.
You didn't think I'd just spill all that information, did you? I needed Vasa to confirm that Briallen could do something like that. Why would Briallen ally with your father only to abduct your soldiers? That's what I'd like to find out.
What does Baron say?
He is unaware of it. You know where I stand with my father, and this unholy alliance he's struck with Briallen will only hurt us. All of us. It will turn into a Fey war for control. So I want to find answers on my own, rather than what my father tries to feed me.
Cassian surveyed the male, his grim face.
So we take out your father. Eris snorted, and Cassian bristled. I am the only person my father has told of this new allegiance. If the Night Court moves, it will expose me. So your worry about Briallen's alliance with Baron is about what it means for you, rather than the rest of us. I only wish to defend the Autumn Court against its worst enemies. Why would I work with you on this? Because we are indeed allies. Eris's smile became lupine. And because I do not believe your High Lord would wish me to go to other territories and ask them to help with Briallen and Koschei. To help them remember that all it might take to secure Briallen's alliance would be to hand over a certain Archeron's sister. Don't be stupid enough to believe my father hasn't thought of that, too.
Cassian's rage flashed red before his eyes. He'd revealed that weakness earlier, let Eris see how much Nesta meant, what he'd do to defend her.
Fool,
he cursed himself. Stupid, useless fool.
I could kill you now and not worry about this at all, Cassian mused. He'd enjoyed beating the shit out of the male that night on the ice with Feyre and Lucian, and he'd waited centuries to kill him anyway. Then you would certainly have a war on your hands. My father would go straight to Briallen and Koschei, I suppose, and then go to the other discontent territories, and you would be wiped off the proverbial map. Perhaps literally, since the Night Court would be divvied up between the other territories if Rhysand and Feyre die without an heir.
Cassian clenched his jaw.
So you're to be my ally, whether I wish it or not?
The brute understands at last.
Cassian ignored the barb.
Yes. What you know, I want to know. I will notify you of any movement on my father's part regarding Briallen. So, send out your shadow singer, and when he returns, find me.
Cassian stared at him from under lowered brows. Eris's mouth curled upward, and before he winnowed into the night like a ghost, he said,
"Stick to fighting battles, General. Leave the ruling to those capable of playing the game."
Chapter 8. Nesta didn't bother to go to the wine cellar or to the kitchen. They'd be locked. But she knew where the stairs lay, knew that particular door at least would not be locked. Still snarling, Nesta yanked open the heavy oak door and peered down the steep, narrow stairwell. Spiral stairs, each a foot high. 10,000 steps, around and around and around. Only the occasional slitted window to offer a breath of air and a glimpse of progress. 10,000 steps between her and the city, and then a half-mile walk at least from the bottom of the mountain to the nearest tavern, and awaiting blessed oblivion. 10,000 steps. She was no longer human. This high fey body could do it. She could do it.
She couldn't do it. The dizziness hit her first. Winding around over and over, eyes trained downward to avoid a slip that would kill her, caused her head to spin. Her empty stomach churned, but she focused, counting each step. 70, 71, 72.
The city below barely drew any closer through the occasional slitted windows she passed. Her legs started to shake. Her knees groaned with the effort of keeping her upright, balancing on the steep drop of each step. Nothing but her own breathing and the sound of her scuffing steps filled the narrow space. All she could see was the endlessly curving, perfect arc of the wall ahead. It never altered, save for those tiny, too rare windows. Around and around and around and around and around, 86, 87, down and down and down and down, 100. She halted, no window in sight, and the walls pushed. The floor kept moving. Nesta leaned into the red stone wall, let its coolness sink into her brow, breathed. 9,900 steps to go. Bracing a hand on the wall, she renewed her descent. Her head spun again. Her legs wobbled. She got in 11 more steps before her knees buckled so suddenly she nearly slid. Only her hand grappling at the uneven wall kept her from wiping out. The stairwell spun and spun and spun, and she shut her eyes against it. Her jagged panting bounced off the stones, and in the stillness, she had no defenses against what her mind whispered. She couldn't shut out her father's final words to her. I loved you from the first moment I held you in my arms. Please, she'd begged the King of Hybern. Please! He'd snapped her father's neck anyway. Nesta gritted her teeth, blowing out breath after breath. She opened her eyes and stretched out her leg to take another step. It trembled so badly that she didn't dare. She didn't let herself dwell on it, rage about it, as she turned around. Didn't even let herself feel the defeat. Her legs protested, but she forced them upward, away. Around and around again, up and up, 111 steps. She was nearly crawling by the last 30, unable to get a breath down, sweat pooling in the bodice of her dress, her hair sticking to her damp neck. What the hell were the benefits of becoming High Fae if she couldn't endure this? The pointed ears she'd learned to like. The infrequent cycle, which Feyre had warned would be painful, had actually been a boon, something Nesta was happy to worry about only twice a year. But what was the point of it, of any of it, if she couldn't conquer these stairs? She kept her eyes on each step, rather than the twisting wall and the dizzying sensation it brought. This hateful house, this horrible place. She grunted as the oak door at the top of the stairwell became visible at last. Fingers digging into the steps hard enough for the tips to bark in pain, she dragged herself up the last few, slithering on her belly onto the hallway floor, and arrived face first in front of Cassian, smirking as he leaned against the adjacent wall. Cassian had needed some time before seeing her again. He'd updated Rhys and the others immediately upon returning. They'd received his information with dour, somber faces. By the end of it, Asriel was preparing for some reconnaissance on Briallen, as Amryn pondered what powers or resources the Queen and Kosjay might possess, if they had indeed captured Eris's soldiers so easily. And then Cassian had been slapped with a new order. Keep an eye on Eris. Beyond the fact that he approached you, Rhys had said, you are my general. Eris commands Baron's forces. Be in communication with him. Cassian had started to object, but Rhys had directed a pointed look at Asriel, and Cassian had caved. As had too much on his plate already. Cassian could deal with that piece of shit Eris on his own. Eris wants to avoid a war that would expose him, Feyre had guessed. If Baron sides with Briallen, Eris would be forced to choose between his father and Prithian. The careful balance he's struck by playing both sides would crumble. He wants to act when it's convenient for his plans. This threatens that. But no one had been able to decide which was the bigger threat for them, Briallen and Kosjay, or Baron's willingness to ally with them. While the Night Court had been trying to make the peace permanent, the bastard had been doing his best to start another war. After an unusually quiet dinner, Cassian had flown back up to the house and found the oak door to the stairs open, Nesta's scent lingering. So he'd waited, counted the minutes. It had been worth it. Seeing her claw her way onto the landing, panting, hair curling with the sweat sliding down her face. Completely worth his generally shit day. Nesta was still sprawled on the hall floor when she hissed,
"Whoever designed those stairs was a monster."
"Would you believe that Rhys, Az, and I had to climb up and down them as punishment when we were boys?" Her eyes shimmered with temper. Good. Better than the vacant ice.
Why?
Because we were young and stupid and testing boundaries with a High Lord who didn't understand practical jokes regarding public nudity.
He nodded toward the stairs.
I got so dizzy on the hike down that I puked on Az. Then he puked on Rhys, and Rhys puked all over himself. It was the height of summer, and by the time we made the trek back up, the heat was unbearable. We all reeked, and the scent of the vomit on the stairs became horrific. We all puked again as we walked through it.
He could have sworn the corners of her mouth were trying to twitch upward.
He didn't hold back his own grin at the memory, even if they'd still had to hike back down and mop it all up. Cassian asked, "What stair did you make it to?"
111.
Nesta didn't rise. Pathetic. Her fingers pushed into the floor, but her body didn't move. "This stupid house wouldn't give me wine."
"I figured that would be the only motivator to make you risk 10,000 stairs.
Her fingers dug into the stone floor once more. He threw her a crooked smile, glad for the distraction.
"You can't get up, can you?"
Her arms strained, elbows buckling. "Go fly into a boulder." Cassian pushed off the wall and reached her in three strides. He wrapped his hands under her arms and hauled her up. She scowled at him the entire time, glared at him some more when she swayed and he gripped her tighter, keeping her upright.
"I knew you were out of shape,"
he observed, stepping away when she'd proved she wasn't about to collapse.
"But 100 steps? Really?"
200 counting the ones up, she grumbled.
"Still pathetic."
She straightened her spine and raised her chin.
"Keep reaching out your hand."
Cassian shrugged, turning toward the hall and the stairwell that would take him up to his rooms.
"If you get tired of being weak as a mewling kitten, come to training."
He glanced over a shoulder. Nesta still panted, her face flushed and furious.
"And participate."
Nesta sat at the breakfast table, grateful she'd left her room soon after sunrise to make the trek up to the dining room. It had taken her double the time it normally would, thanks to her stiff, throbbing legs. Getting out of bed had required gritted teeth and a litany of cursing. Everything afterward had only gotten worse. Bending to put her legs into her pants, going to the bathroom, even just heaving open the door, there wasn't one part of her legs that didn't ache. So she'd left her room early, not wanting to give Cassian the satisfaction of seeing her limp and grimace into the dining room. The problem, of course, was that now she wasn't entirely certain she could stand. So she'd taken a good long while eating her meal, was choking down the porridge when Cassian prowled through the dining room doors, took one look at her, and smirked. He knew. Somehow the swaggering asshole knew. She might have snapped something, but Azrael stalked into the room on his heels. Nesta straightened at the Shadow Singer's appearance, the darkness clinging to his shoulders as he offered her a grim smile. Azrael was nothing short of beautiful, even with those scarred hands and the shadows that flowed from him like smoke. She'd always found him to be the prettiest of the three males who called themselves brothers. Cassian slid into the chair opposite hers, his food instantly appearing before him, and said with grating cheer,
"Morning, Nesta."
She threw him an equally saccharine smile.
"Good morning, Cassian."
Asriel's hazel eyes danced, but he said nothing as he gracefully took his place beside Cassian, a plate of his own food appearing.
"I haven't seen you in a while," Nesta said to him. She couldn't remember the last time, actually.
Asriel took a bite of his eggs before replying.
"Likewise."
The shadow singer nodded toward her clothes.
"How's training?"
Cassian cut him a sharp look. Nesta glanced between them. There was no way Asriel didn't know about yesterday. Cassian had probably gloated about the incident with the stairs, too. She sipped from her tea.
"Training is fantastic. Absolutely riveting."
Asriel's mouth curled up at the corner.
"I hope you're not giving my brother a hard time."
She set down her teacup.
"Is that a threat, Shadow Singer?"
Cassian took a long drink from his own tea, drained it to the dregs. Asriel said coolly,
"I don't need to resort to threats."
The shadows coiled around him, snakes ready to strike. Nesta gave him a smile, holding his stare.
"Neither do I."
She leaned back in her chair and said to Cassian, who was frowning at both of them,
"I want to train with him instead."
She could have sworn Cassian went still.
"Interesting."
Asriel coughed into his tea. Cassian drummed his fingers on the table.
"I think you'll find that Az is even less forgiving than I am."
"With that pretty face?" she crooned. "I have a hard time believing that."
Asriel ducked his head, focusing on his food.
"You want to train with Az?"
Cassian said tightly.
"Then go ahead."
He appeared thoughtful for a moment, his eyes lighting before he added,
"Though I doubt that you'll survive a lesson with him when you can't manage to walk down 100 stairs without being so sore the next morning that you're unable to get out of your chair."
She braced her feet on the floor. He'd read every tinge of pain on her face if she stood. But letting him see he was right. Asriel studied the two of them as she planted her hands on the table, bit down on her yelp, and stood in a great rush. Cassian shoveled more eggs into his mouth and said around them,
"Doesn't count when you use your hands to do most of the work."
Nesta schooled her face into utter disdain, even as a hiss rose inside her.
"I bet that isn't what you've been telling yourself at night."
Asriel's shoulders shook with silent laughter as Cassian set down his fork, his eyes gleaming with challenge. Cassian's voice dropped an octave.
"Is that what those smutty books teach you? That it's only at night?"
It took a heartbeat for the words to settle, and she couldn't stop it. The heat that sprang to her face, her glance at his powerful hands. Even with Asriel now biting his lip to keep from laughing, she couldn't stop herself. Cassian said with a wicked smile,
"It could be any time. Dawn's first light, or when I'm bathing, or even after a long, hard day of practice."
She didn't miss the slight emphasis he put on long, hard. Nesta couldn't stop her toes from curling in her boots. But she said with a slight smile, striding for the doorway, refusing to let one bit of the discomfort in her sore legs show.
"Sounds like you have a lot of time on your hands, Cassian."
"You're in deep shit,"
Asriel said mildly to him on the chilly veranda as Nesta donned her cloak inside.
"I know,"
Cassian muttered. He had no idea how it had happened, how he'd gone from mocking Nesta to taunting her with his own bedroom habits, then imagining her hand wrapped around him, pumping him, until he was a heartbeat away from exploding out of his chair and leaping into the skies.
He knew Az had been well aware of the shift in his scent, how his skin had become too tight at the way she said his name, his cock an instant ache rubbing against the buttons of his pants. He could count on one hand the number of times she'd addressed him by name. The thought of that one hand led him back to her hand squeezing him rough and hard, just the way he liked it. Cassian gritted his teeth and breathed in the crisp morning air, willed it to settle him, made himself focus on the morning wind's sweet song. The wind around Valaris had always been lovely, gentle, not like the vicious, unforgiving mistress that ruled the peaks of Illyria. Az chuckled, the wind shifting the strands of his dark hair.
You two need a chaperone up here?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
I thought you were the chaperone.
Az threw him a wicked smile.
I'm not entirely sure I'm enough.
Cassian flipped him off.
Good luck today.
Az would leave soon to begin his spying on Briallen. Feyre had decided it last night.